CQCQ. This is Ham Radio and More.
Okay, we're back. Computers play tricks. I didn't hear my music didn't play. At least I didn't hear it. And so we went to the break a little premature there. Anyway, 1-800-293-5366. We're talking to Fred Hopengard in K1VR in Lincoln, Massachusetts. And we're discussing antenna ordinances, zoning ordinances. Okay, let's just go over some of the basics that you have here. Obviously, when you're dealing with a zoning board, what are some of the things that you should really consider?
Well, one of the most important things to deal with when you're preparing to go to a zoning board is to have the right documents with you, because they want to know what you're talking about. Most of all, they fear what they don't know about. Here in the eastern Massachusetts area, we have one particular area west of Boston called the Needham Antenna Farm, where there are three or four towers, each in excess of 1,000 feet tall.
And 1,000 feet?
Yes, that's right. And when people start talking about towers around here, that's the thing that the local boards fear, that you're going to put up something 1,000 feet tall and 40 feet wide at the base. So it's important to let them know what kind of an antenna structure you're talking about. And, for example, if it's one of the more popular antenna structures, a Rhone 25 tower, it's only 12 inches wide. If it's Rhone 45, it's only 18 inches wide. And, of course, all of the antenna that's below the tree line is hidden. Things like that are very important, and you demonstrate that with exhibits and the application that you're putting forward. In addition to that, they want to know about what your plot looks like, so that they'll know how many people are going to be affected, how visible it is, if there are any trees that will prevent a clear viewing of the antenna system. And you really need to put together something of a paper package when you start down the road on the road to talking to a board.
Mm-hmm.
You'll also want to be able to provide the construction plans, how you're going to get the concrete out to the spot, so that they can deal with any fears that they might have that you're going to be wrecking a wetland. You need to deal with the possibility that a wetland may be nearby, and therefore you need this plot plan of your property to be able to show where any wetlands may lie, so that they can be reassured on a situation like that. One of the favorite things I like to do is to, if you've had this antenna system up in some other place, or you have a friend with something similar, to go in with photographs, preferably photographs that show it in a favorable light,
mm-hmm.
and impress upon the board that this is not something horrific, that it's something found in hundreds of thousands of locations around the United States, and that property values are not going to suffer because of it. It's an ordinary fixture that you'd find in a whole lot of backyards.
Do these boards have any idea of what amateur radio really is? Do they have any idea of how helpful we can be in emergencies? Is that a concern of theirs?
It's really not a concern of theirs, but it's still helpful if you show up. I've actually, with helpful letters, I've seen presentations and worked on assembling presentations where the amateur was able to get favorable letters from the local civil defense, police department, Red Cross, and the like. And these things can be very useful if folks realize that you're going to be an addition to the community and not a subtraction from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard a story on the island of Kauai what's the name of that area? It's on one part of the island. It's escaped me, but it's at Princeville, in the Princeville area of Kauai, that when they had their hurricane, of course, Hurricane Iniki, and it destroyed everything, that they did not permit in Princeville any antennas whatsoever for amateur radio use. It was not possible. But there were amateurs in other parts of the island, and they had solar power, because I guess from what I was told, the mayor or whatever, the radio equipment that they had, the batteries died and they couldn't continue to talk. So they needed to use amateur radio, and the solar-powered radios were able to help them. Anyway, on the Princeville side, they didn't know what kind of state it was in, because no one there had any communications. And then after the hurricane and when everything died down a little bit and people were back to normal, they started allowing antennas. But it was too little too, you know, it was too late, of course, for Hurricane Iniki. But for the next time, I guess there'll be antennas on that side of the island.
Yes, it's one of the interesting facts that when people say to me in public hearings, but we can always arrange emergency communication, my answer is usually not doing it after the fact does you no good.
Exactly.
And one of the curious things is
okay,
that
hold your thought, Fred, because we got to take station identification. 1-800-293-5366, 1-800-293-5366. You're listening to Ham Radio. More. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back to Ham Radio and More. Again, we're talking to Fred Hoppengarten, K1VR, and we're talking about antenna ordinances. Our phone number is 1-800-293-5366, 1-800-293-5366. You were saying before I rudely interrupted you.
In emergency situations, you often see a situation where the planning boards or zoning boards will think that, oh, gee, all of this is no longer necessary. We now have cellular telephone. But what has happened in emergencies that we have observed is that the cellular telephone system quickly gets overloaded and it's unable to carry on the communications necessary. And amateur radio still has a role in providing emergency communications because the hams are so good at getting antennas back up a whole lot faster than you can recreate a cellular telephone system.
Well, I was told that at the Oklahoma bombing that occurred, that the municipality emergency services, you know, the police and fire, et cetera, they actually overrid the cellular links, and you could not make a cellular phone call. It was all tied up by them. I don't know how you do that, but that's what I was told, and so amateur radio did play a major part there.
It always does.
Yeah, it does. Okay, let's take a phone call here from Rich in Tempe, Arizona. You're online, Rich.
Good afternoon. I was just curious if this issue has gone to the U.S. Supreme Court, because this issue reminds me of a ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court about 3 years ago where this lady put protesting signs in her window that violated CCNR, and she took it all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and she won. So I see some similarities. I'm curious if this is going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, that particular case was a First Amendment case, and it's a constitutional claim. The problem here is that it's hard to make amateur radio into a First Amendment free speech case, and it just hasn't been a whole lot successful in most cases. There is no existing Supreme Court case which justifies amateur radio in the face of zoning bylaws or common covenants and restraints. And I'm not so sure we're going to see one, but we have seen a whole lot of cases around the United States from state courts as well as federal courts that take the ham's position.
Okay, because I'm worried because I live in a mobile home park and I got a couple long wires floating around my roof and two trees and to other mobile homes, so I'm just curious.
Well, discretion may be the better part of valor because you're bound by a lease, and I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And that lease probably contains something that may affect you, but you should know that if the lease does not prohibit what you're trying to do there, then you're not prohibited, because we do not live in a society where it's outlawed unless permitted. It's just the other way around. It's permitted in the United States unless outlawed.
Okay.
So I wish you well with it.
Check your lease, Rich.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, 1-800-293-5366, 1-800-293-5366. It's interesting, certain topics that we can discuss here, the lines light up. Today it's quiet. Now, it might be that it's a week before Easter. It might be that WrestleMania takes place in a couple hours, but I don't think it's that, Fred. I think that people, you know, they're like, this is a hard topic. They feel there's nothing they can do. So, I don't know. Okay, we're going to take a real short break. When we come back, we'll continue with Fred Hoppengarten and your calls, 1-800-293-5366. 1-800-293-5366. We're talking to Fred Hoppengarten, K1VR, and we're talking about zoning ordinances. Now, one other thing that I want to mention to everybody, and I'm losing my train of thought here, is next week we're going to have Steve Bible on, and we're going to be talking about spread spectrum technology. And if you want to know about the new rulings that are coming down by the FCC allowing certain types of spread spectrum technology being used on the amateur bands, we're going to talk about it next week. Some of the people who are against spread spectrum are some of these the low power people. They're kind of anti-spread spectrum. They feel that it's going to destroy their ability to do low signal work and low power work, so we'll see what happens. Anyway, 1-800-293-5366. Fred, let's see. I downloaded a the whole PRB1, as you wrote here, the address and everything, and on the internet, and so I have a copy of that. I think everybody should have that. It's kind of interesting. Now, if you're going to do a building permit, if you want to put up a tower, most places they require you to have a building permit, isn't it? Is that correct? Frank, I need his lineup. Fred, can I hear you?
Hello.
Okay, yeah, we had our sound down. Sorry about that.
Most places do require a building permit, but even if they don't, I am of the opinion that it's a good idea to get one because of the insurance questions, and that is that some insurance policies simply won't pay you should it ever be damaged in a hurricane, for example, unless it was constructed with a building permit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so in order to get that building permit, you need to have a plan, and the better prepared you are, the better, I would imagine. Now, you've got a list of a couple of things you've suggested, and want to go through those if you're going to go and try to get some a building permit?
Sure. The best way to start preparing a building permit is to think about preparing what amounts to a three-ring binder of materials so that you can go forward. You're going to need a plot plan showing where you are in relation to other houses in the street, a copy of your FCC amateur radio license, a specification sheet from the manufacturer of your antenna support structure, some plans in terms of the construction of the base and the guying, that is, what kind of soil do you have, if you can determine that, what kind of concrete are you going to be using, how much of it are you going to be using, and then specification sheets for the antennas, photographs if you had the system up elsewhere or have a friend with something similar, and if you are a tenant instead of a landowner, you will want a letter of permission from the landlord.
Oh, that's important. Yeah, I didn't think about that, but of course that's important.
You'll probably also want to think about assembling with this package, a copy of your homeowner's general liability policy. And if it's possible, it's a good idea to assemble some letters of support from neighbors. Now, it's often difficult to get a neighbor to say that I'm really in favor of having this guy put up an antenna in his yard. But sometimes it's a whole lot easier to get a neighbor to write a letter which simply says that he doesn't oppose the grant of a permit.
Mm-hmm.
And if the radio ham drafts these letters in advance and provides them ready for a signature to a neighbor, that's the best way to get them.
And I agreed. Okay, we're going to take a break. 1-800-293-5366. We now have one line available. We're going to go to Larry when we come back, and Dave, and you can be next at 1-800-293-5366. When we come back from the break, we go right to the phones. So fill up that last line. And anyway, we're talking about antenna ordinances, what you need to do. How do you convince the person that the zoning group that you know, the towers are not an eyesore? How do you convince them that we won't cause interference? All these questions and more you can ask, and we'll ask Fred when we come back. 1-800-293-5366, Ham Radio and More. Oh, that's right. I wanted to mention, if you're hearing us any time other than 2300 UTC on Sunday, then you're hearing us on tape delay, and please don't call. We'll be right back. Does EDCO have a deal for you? Electronic Distributors in Virginia sure does. Here it is. From AOR, it's the new AR2700. It's only $209.95. Now listen to what it does. This scanner will receive from 500 kilohertz all the way up to 1300 megahertz. It has tremendous features. AM, NFM, WFM. It has tremendous programmable step sizes. It has a wide variety of search and scan facilities, auto mode tuning, interval timers, pause timers, delay timers. It does so many things. And it's available for a mere $209.95 from participating dealers such as Ham Radio Outlet, or Universal Radio, or R&L Electronics, or Tucker Electronics, and there's others. Or you can give them a call if you'd like at their 800 number. That's EDCO, products from around the world. At 1-800-344-0397. That's 1-800-344-0397. Mention Ham Radio and More. They have tremendous products. The AR2700. Get it now. Len Winkler here for Amateur Radio Trader Magazine, the Ham Radio Marketplace. 64 pages twice a month with the greatest ads, the greatest information that you can possibly look for. It's amazing. You would think that this was just a magazine that had buy and sell equipment. But no, there are all kinds of informative articles, from Simpleton's Guide to Quickie Antennas or Emergency Antennas or Guide to Working All States. So many different things. And you can get a subscription by calling 1-800-77-HAM-AD. Or you can place an ad in their section of classifieds. The merchandise just sells rapidly. I'm telling you, you will be surprised at how fast it actually sells. Give them a call at 1-800-77-HAM-AD. Ham-AD. Mention that the Ham Radio and More show told you to call 1-800-77-HAM-AD. Amateur Radio Trader. Twice a month, 1-800-77-HAM-AD. 1-800-774-2623. Call now. I have a must-buy product from MFJ. That's right. You've got to have it in your shack. The MFJ 784B. What is it? Well, it's a tunable DSP filter. And only MFJ gives you a tunable and programmable brick wall DSP filter. It has a tunable spotting tone. It's an MFJ invention. It accurately tunes even the narrowest CW filter. It has an exclusive adapting tuner. The center frequency tuning automatically becomes finer as you narrow your bandwidth. Improved auto notch. New quieter audio amplifier. Gives you a full 2.5 watts output. Speaker on off button. Filter talk. And so much more. So many DSP filters are built into this, and it's a $249.95 value or less. You can't go wrong at MFJ. 1-800-647-1800 for the MFJ 784B. That's 1-800-647-1800. MFJ Enterprises, the world leader in radio accessories.
CQ, CQ. This is Ham Radio and More with your host, Lynn Winkler, KB7LPW.
Okay, we're back to Ham Radio and More, and we're talking about antenna ordinances and what you can do or what you can't do or how well you can do it on getting your antenna up in this climate of not wanting people to put antennas up. All right, let's go to Larry in Massachusetts. Welcome to Ham Radio and More, Larry.
Yeah, I'm Larry, WA1WEJ. I have an interesting story about that. About 12 years ago, I wanted to put up a tower, but I found out that the town was having trying to keep a large telephone company from putting up a microwave tower very close to me on a hill, and I wouldn't have a chance. But I did find that if I put up a windmill, I would have no trouble, because that's alternative energy and was not related. And so that's what I did, and I used the tower. I put a 250-watt generator on top of it, and I have all my antennas on the Ron Tower. And I had no trouble doing it, because there is some state law or federal law that they can't keep alternative energy out.
Fred?
Well, curiously, There's a similar strategy that's coming along today. If you look at Part 47 of the Code of Federal Regulations, Section 1.400, you'll see that restrictions impairing reception of television broadcast signals have been dramatically restricted. So one of the strategies that I've been exploring with some of my clients is the possibility of putting up a tower for television reception purposes, then dealing with the amateur radio antenna on the tower later.
Mm. I see. Well, the powers that be were not particularly against me. Their argument was with another entity, and I was just a fly in the ointment, so I had to get around that, and they really helped me with it.
I think that in the end you would have probably been able to reach a satisfactory resolution merely on the difference between a commercial use and a non-commercial use in a residential area. But glad to have it happen. What town was that?
What town was it? Plainfield.
Well, good enough. That's congratulations.
It. All right.
I'm just curious, Larry, did you ever get any energy out of the windmill?
Oh, yes. There's some. I can't run everything all the time on it. By everything, I mean everything in the shack.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's only a 250-watt, the bank of batteries. I had to replace it once, and I have to replace the batteries every once in a while.
Well, I was just curious. I was wondering if it was just, looks.
It's a good talking point, and it's something that's really... It's very nice. The maintenance on it is high, and the batteries are expensive.
Well, sounds like a neat idea. Thanks a lot, Larry, for calling.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye. Let's go to Dave, KI7ZU. Welcome to Ham Radio and More, Dave.
Good evening. Let me ask you, I'm supposed to move into a healthcare center, and in that center, their restrictions are you're not supposed to plug anything into the wall unless their technician approves it, and they may not allow antennas. And I don't mean outdoor. I mean like something in the window that you can use 2 meters with. What can be done about those restrictions?
Boy, that gets even tougher. That, again, is a lease situation. And you really have to go into the situation with your eyes wide open. There are advantages to facilities such as the one you're describing and disadvantages. And I think in the end you're going to wind up balancing the advantages against the disadvantages. I hate to see people giving up their ability to use amateur radio when they move, and you may want to think real hard about that, because once you're there, you don't want to get involved in a lawsuit with the folks that are housing you.
Is there any way that he could get, like, a letter ahead of time that says that they would permit it? Would that be a legal document if sometime in the future after that, they said it's interfering or it's causing a problem or something like that?
Well, the problem is that in the lease, you normally find a sentence which says, this is all there is, and no other representations are valid, and since the lease is normally the last thing signed, the letter obtained in advance could be wiped out by the lease.
Hmm. Well, Dave, some choice words from Fred saying you better check all your options before you do this.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, Dave, thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, 1-800-293-5366, 1-800-293-5366. We have a couple of availabilities if you can still get in before the end of the hour. Let's go to Bill, N1NIK, in Richfield, Connecticut.
Hi, Len.
How you doing?
You're coming in kind of tough here in Connecticut tonight. Looks like some Rudy on top of you.
Well, it must be that or... Oh, really? I've heard some of that is supposedly interfering on 5070. That's not good.
No.
I thought maybe it was the comet that got in the way of my signal or something, or bouncing off of comet of Hale-Bopp tonight.
Oh, that's right, too. I forgot to go out and look at it.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, my question is, I understand you were scratching your head when they typed it in. How can I tell what is permitted as far as, putting up an antenna or a tower without revealing myself to the authorities?
Oh, a very interesting question. Many hams are afraid to, quote, reveal themselves to the authorities, unquote. In fact, you'll find that the clerk down at the planning board or the board of appeals or the town clerk really doesn't much care what you have in mind when you walk in the door and ask to purchase a copy of the zoning bylaw. They never ask, why do you want a copy of the bylaw? Just buy it. Most towns, it's going to cost you somewhere between $4 and $20. It's unbelievably well worth it to go buy the bylaw in advance and in its entirety, because you simply can't rely upon anyone who hasn't really thought hard about the question to give you an answer to what's really going on. You should read it for yourself.
But can the layperson understand this stuff?
Actually, most of your local zoning bylaws are normally not even drafted by attorneys. They're normally drafted by the town planning board and passed at town meeting or the like. I think it's normally pretty easy to understand. There are some ambiguities occasionally, and after you've read it the first time, you may want to clarify the situation. But I've never seen a harm come from asking questions about the town bylaw in advance. The building inspectors are pretty discreet, and you know, you're just another face coming up to the counter.
And exactly what book do you ask for?
The zoning bylaw.
Okay, so that's the answer, Bill. Buy your zoning bylaw book in Richfield, Connecticut, from the zoning board.
Okay. Also, what about the state laws? Is that all included in the zoning law?
It is not included in the zoning law. You'll find it normally in the state building code. And in Connecticut, I think there is a setback rule which applies to antenna structures. You definitely want to check that. It's statewide, but it would apply in your town. And for that, you'll either have to check around with folks who've been down that road or an attorney who is licensed in the state of Connecticut or familiar with Connecticut.
Thanks a lot. I got to go for my break. Thanks a lot, Bill. We'll be right back to Ham Radio and more.
Our guest today is Lyle Fendishman, radio's first engineer.
I've been around since the days of silent radio, before talkies were invented.
Mr. Fendishman, have you seen this fantastic new book, Blast from the Past, A Pictorial History of Radio's First 75 Years by B. Eric Rhodes?
Boy, it's wonderful. All of these 900-plus photos are all people I worked with in radio from the very start.
As you look through Blast from the Past, you miss the good old days?
Well, you know, I sit here in my little one-room apartment, and I still feel part of the radio business. I turn the knobs on my dresser, pretending it's part of the equipment, and cue my one-eyed cat, who bites me on occasion, just like the, well, Marie used to do on the old show.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fendishman.
Snack you.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm sorry I can't read well anymore.
Blast from the Past, A Pictorial History of Radio's First 75 Years.
Call with your credit card handy, 800-228-5500, $39.99 plus shipping. That's 800-228-5500.
Will your children be off to college soon? In the face of skyrocketing tuition costs, where will you get the money? Unbelievably, there's over $15 billion in financial aid just waiting to be claimed. And you'll find it in Prentice Hall's The Scholarship Book. No matter what the grades, age, or family income, The Scholarship Book can help you get the money you need. It's the complete guide to private sector scholarships, grants, and loans. Over 400 pages of little-known facts on more than 100,000 scholarships, some worth over $20,000. The scholarship book is easy to use. You'll find money for students to study anything from accounting to zoology, for students of various races, ancestries, or religions. There's even money for left-handed students. Find out who has the scholarships, how much they're worth, and how to get them, even if you're already in college. Now you can get the inside track to billions in financial aid with the Scholarship Book. A special hardcover edition is just three easy payments of $8.99 plus shipping.
Call 800-543-5300 now. That's 800-543-5300.
Here's how you can become a smarter investor and get 4 weeks of Barron's free. When you subscribe to Barron's, the Financial Weekly, for 13 weeks and use your credit card, you'll receive an extra 4 weeks free. That's a 24% savings off the newsstand price and a full 17 weeks of Barron's to help you become a smarter investor. No one looks at the markets with a more insightful eye than Barron's, offering timely coverage of stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, everything the independent investor needs to stay informed. Subscribe to Barron's today. Get the knowledge and insight you need to help you achieve your investment goals. Don't miss this great offer. 13 weeks for just $39, plus an extra 4 weeks free. This offer is available to new subscribers only. Act now.
Call toll-free in the continental U.S., 800-228-8222. That's 800-228-8222. For Barron's, it's how money becomes wealth.
CQ, CQ, this is Ham Radio and More.
Okay, I noticed, Fred, that in your article you said that in front of the local board, it's not a good thing to say, well, don't worry, Mr. and Mrs. Member of the Board. If a problem arises, I can fix the problem.
A terrible idea. The reason is that if a problem arises in somebody else's TV set or telephone system, and you said you're going to fix it, they might actually hold you to it. Better that you offer to do everything you can to help out the situation in the sense that you'll offer advice and let the other guy work on his own gear. You don't want to buy his system for him.
And I guess it doesn't work to plead on them and by saying that in case of an emergency, I may be the only guy able to communicate to the outside world in our neighborhood.
Well, if you're going to make that claim, you'd better be ready to back it up with a battery-powered system and equipment that will help out in the situation.
Okay, and now I guess it's also not a good thing to say that there will never be any interference, huh?
Boy, that's a tough one because so few people can defend it. There's always some new piece of gear that's badly designed that's going to come along. It isn't the ham's fault, but interference can happen. Fortunately, most of these things can be cleared up with such simple remedies. It's unbelievable.
Okay, if people have further questions and want to get a hold of you via the Internet to ask you something else, what's your email address?
Oh, they could send me a quick note at k1vr@juno.com.
Okay, k1vr@juno.com. Juno is getting to be pretty popular, it seems. So many people are using that. It's amazing.
It's a good service for non-commercial use.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for spending an hour on a Sunday evening with us and got out a lot of good information. I appreciate it, and hopefully some people thought it was valuable.
My pleasure, Len.
Okay, thanks again.
Kind of you to ask.
Okay, well, thank you for doing it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, again, next week we're going to be discussing spread spectrum technology. And I think that's going to be quite interesting. Another thing, let's see, do I have that with me? Yes, I do. We actually have, for our Dayton Hamvention Forum, our respective speakers and everything except one. I'd love to hear from somebody who believes that contesting should be restricted to only certain segments of the bands, or that it should be only restricted to certain times or something like that. If you feel strongly that contesters have too much say-so as to where they can go, etc., etc., we'd certainly like to hear from you in our forum in Dayton, Ohio, if you're going to be there. And being a speaker on this gives you certain perks that I could discuss with you. Again, please send me email, lenwink@goodnet.com. We're going to talk about the ARRL at the forum, and we've got Stephen Mendelson, WA2DHF, the ARRL first VP, who's going to support the league. And the people on the other side, the guy is going to be Joseph Schroeder, W9JUV, a 50-year ham, who's going to say that it's not all the greatest that there could be with the ARRL. However, we'll see. Saying that contesters should be able to go anywhere will be John Doerr, K1AR, the contesting column editor for CQ Magazine. We're going to talk about the Internet, and it's going to be interesting when we talk about CW requirements. Nancy Cott of FIST says yes, and Fred Maya, W5YI, says get rid of the requirement. We'll be seeing you guys next Sunday on Ham Radio and More. Until then, 73, we're QRT.